We are continuing our seminar on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. We are now in chapter 2. In chapter 1, we first saw how Duryodhan was appraising his army, and he was also appraising the opposite side, the Pandavas. In chapter 1, we saw that when the Kurus blew their conch shell and when the Pandavas blew their conch shells, it was different experience. For when the Pandavas headed by Krishna blew their transcendental conch shells, it shattered the hearts of the Kurus. That did not happen when the Kurus sounded their conch shells. Then Arjuna spoke the first words to Krishna, "Take my chariot. I want to see who has come here to fight on behalf of the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra, known as Duryodhana." And when Arjuna saw on the other side family members, teachers, so many relatives that he had spent his whole life, he became overwhelmed by compassion. And in two different sets of arguments, Arjuna presented to Krishna why he should not fight. He gave moral reasons, he gave social reasons, and then at the end, we hear from Sanjaya that Arjuna says to Krishna, "I shall not fight. O Govinda, I shall not fight." In chapter 2, Krishna's immediate response was that, "Arjuna, this behavior of yours is the sign of somebody impotent, a eunuch. Masma klaibhyam smagama partha." Krishna said, "This behavior of yours is unbecoming of someone like you." But Arjuna continued to give his reasons why he didn't want to fight the battle. But then we saw in chapter verse number 7 in chapter 2, the turning point of this Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna says to Krishna, "Shishyasteham shadimang tvang prapanam." Now I am confused about my duty. So at least Arjuna has enough sense to recognize that he is in a confused position. And so he says, "In this condition I am asking you, Krishna. I don't want you to be my friend. I want you to be my guru. I want you to be my teacher. Now you tell me, Krishna, what I should do at this crucial moment." Because this is supposed to be the first day of war. So Arjuna surrenders to Krishna. "Shishyasteham, I'm your disciple. Prapanam, I surrender. Now you instruct me. Don't act as my friend. All these years we have been friends. But now I want that friendly relation to end. You act as my guru." And the implication, guru's business is to chastise. So Krishna accepts Arjuna's request and begins instructing Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. And he says to Arjuna, "A learned person that you're purporting to be does not speak like you. You are posing yourself as a learned person, pandit. But no pundit talks like you're talking. So we read in our last class 20 verses, verses 11 through 30, Sankhya, an analytical study of life, and Krishna has broken it down to two items, matter and spirit, or body and soul, or what is eternal and what is temporary. That is what we learned in those 20 verses, 11 through 30, in chapter 2. Krishna gave the symptoms of the soul, so many symptoms. Now we'll pick up on text number 31. So this next section of chapter 2 is called Kshatriya Dharma. Because what we're doing, I have broken out the Bhagavad Gita into different sections. So this next section, 8 verses, Kshatriya Dharma. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, considering your specific duty as a Kshatriya, you should know that there is no better engagement for you than fighting on religious principles, and so there is no need for hesitation. So Krishna is now addressing Arjuna from his social position in society. He is a Kshatriya. And as a Kshatriya, there is a code of behavior that is necessary. Now Krishna is saying, this war, there is no better engagement for you. And fighting on religious principles. We can fight, but a lot of times the fighting is based on sense gratification, selfishness, lust, desire. But Krishna is pointing out to Arjuna, this war is based on religious principles. And there were many reasons. First of all, it was the lawful inheritance for the Pandavas. And even though they lost in the gambling match, not once, but twice, they executed the punishment. And so the agreement was that after the exile, they would regain their kingdom. So they had every right, they had every religious reason to get back their kingdom. After all, they're Kshatriyas. But Duryodhan would not give them, what to speak of, 5 villages. He would not give them even the amount of land on a needlepoint. And before this day of number one of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna had already gone to the Kurus on a peace mission. And Krishna said, the Pandavas and I don't want war, but you have to give them their property, what is owed them, what is religiously due them, that which you promised, Kurus. We don't want to war, but you have to give the Pandavas what is theirs. But of course, Duryodhan, because he is selfish, because he is envious, he does not agree. And therefore, the peace proposal was a failure. So Krishna is saying here, there is no need for hesitation. No more talks. That day, that ship has already sailed. Now it is time for action. Okay, next, Krishna says, O Partha, happy are the Kshatriyas to whom such fighting opportunities come unsought. Yes, Pandavas didn't want this fight, but they had no choice. They didn't want it, they were not seeking it, they were not belligerent, but it is now their duty, opening for them the doors of the heavenly planets, because in the scriptures, the Kshatriya who fights on religious principles is a win-win situation. If he wins the war, he gets the spoils of the war. If he dies in the fight, he goes to heaven. What is the loss? So again, no need for hesitation. You should be happy. You should be happy. If, however, you do not perform your religious duty of fighting, then you will certainly incur sins for neglecting your duties. And in chapter 1, Arjuna was saying just the opposite. Arjuna was saying, oh, if we fight, we'll become implicated by sin. And Krishna is saying, no, it's just the opposite. By not fighting, you will incur sin. Just the opposite. Again, religious duty of fighting. Neglecting your duties. Everybody has duties. Even these children have duties. Yes, he poked his head up. Very good. Everyone has duties. Human life is judged by how we execute our duties. That's how we're judged. Certainly someone like Arjuna is also going to be judged on how he executes his duty. That is the meaning of Aryan life, advanced civilized life. Just in the same way, Maharaj Parikshit, as soon as he was informed of the curse, immediately he said, what is my duty? Not what is my bucket list. That's a new thing now. Bucket list means, oh, I only have so many years to live, then I must go to France, I must fly a helicopter. They make a list of all the things they want to do, sense gratification, before they die. It's called the bucket list. And they think, oh, if I execute all, everything in my bucket list, oh, now I can die. That's not Parikshit. Parikshit's response was, what is my duty now that I'm going to die? Not, oh, I only have a few years to enjoy sense gratification. Duty and sense gratification are two different things. So Krishna is hitting on this point. Your religious duty of fighting, and lose your reputation as a fighter. Again, Kshatriya lives by certain codes. So Krishna is pointing out, and another thing for a Kshatriya, his name and fame is the most important thing. The most important thing. How will I be remembered after I die? What kind of legacy I will leave behind? In Vedic culture, we have so many nice examples of great kings who left behind a great example. They lived, like we will learn in the next chapter. Whatever a great man does, common man follows. So somebody in a high position should be concerned. Oh, I have to act in such a way because what kind of legacy am I going to leave behind after I die? Like we worship Prabhupada. May his fame spread all over the three worlds. As his disciples, it's our duty to make sure that Prabhupada's name and fame is promoted properly. Not that Prabhupada was good, but his disciples were all nonsense. That doesn't look good. The disciples have to show that, yes, Here is our great teacher, and we try to follow his example. Then you will certainly incur sins for neglecting your duties and lose your reputation as a fighter. Arjuna's reputation was well known. Who did he defeat? Shiva. And he defeated so many other great personalities. So Arjuna, when he went to heaven to see his father Indra, there was that war with the Nivata Kavachas, and there was this group that even the demigods couldn't defeat, and Arjuna was able to defeat them. So Arjuna, and Arjuna was there when Krishna got his wife, Kalindi, and Arjuna and Krishna, they secured the Kandava forest so that Agni could get rejuvenated. So Arjuna had done, and then even amongst the Kurus, there were so many incidents when Arjuna defeated them. One time they even captured Duryodhan. And what did Yudhishthira say? Let him go. And they couldn't believe it. They captured him fair and square. They could have finished the whole thing. And what did Yudhishthira say? Let him go. They couldn't believe it. So Arjuna's reputation as a fighter, he had done so many great things. He was the best student of Dronacharya, the number one student. So he had quite a reputation. Who? So many people tried to win Draupadi. Who won Draupadi? Arjuna. Yes. So, Krishna is reminding Arjuna, hey, your reputation. People will always speak of your infamy. And for a respectable person, dishonor is worse than death. Again, for the Kshatriya, his name and fame is the most important thing. The great generals who have highly esteemed your name and fame, see, there it is, who have highly esteemed your name and fame, will think that you have left the battlefield out of fear only. Yes, that is so abominable for a Kshatriya to leave the battle out of fear. Even Jarasandha tried to use that against Krishna. When Krishna, Bhim, and Arjuna came to Jarasandha disguised as, who knows, what was their disguise? Yes, as brahmanas. And Jarasandha was very noble and very charitable to the brahmanas. So he was willing to give brahmanas whatever they wanted. So what did Krishna say? He said, no, we don't want anything from you. We just want to fight you. And then they took off their disguises, and he said, here is Arjuna, here is Bhima, and I'm your old enemy, Krishna. We've come to fight. And what did Jarasandha say? Oh, Krishna, I'm not going to fight you, because the last time I fought you, you ran away, ran towards me, right? But the real reason Krishna left was what? How's that? Yes. To get Rukmini. He had better things to do. After all, how many times did Krishna already defeat Jarasandha? 17 times. Already. Seems like Jarasandha conveniently forgot those 17 times where Krishna killed off all of his army and let Jarasandha go back. So Jarasandha tried to use that logic. Oh, Krishna, you become afraid in battle. And then he said, Arjuna, you're younger, but Bhim? He's, I'll fight with Bhim. All right, What could be more painful for you, O son of Kunti? Either you will be killed on the battlefield and attain the heavenly planets, or you will conquer and enjoy the earthly kingdom. This is Krishna's logic. Win-win. Either you get this, or you get this. What are you going to lose? There's no loss here. Therefore, get up with determination and fight. Yes, if you're going to fight, you have to be determined. Same way, if you're going to take a vow, that vow has to be done with determination. Not like you hear people say, oh, Prabhu, are you going to come to the program? I'll try. That means no determination. So in the same way, when somebody gets initiated, they have to make those vows. But those vows had to be made with determination. Dridhavrata, in the Bhagavad Gita. Dridhavrata. Firm vow. Prabhupada says the same thing. How can one be a celibate? How is it that someone can be a brahmachari throughout their whole life or a sannyasi? Because they make a firm vow that under no circumstance, no, I'm going to do this. Same way with a fasting, like a Ekadasi fast or Janmashtami fast. It's not that, well, I'll see how long I last. No. The Ekadasi comes, no grains and beans. Janmashtami comes, okay, till midnight. Determination. Do thou fight for the sake of fighting, without considering happiness or distress, loss or gain, victory or defeat. And by so doing, you shall never incur sin. So that's the mode of goodness. This thing here. You know you're in the mode of goodness when you execute your duties without considering happiness and distress. Somebody who is in the mode of passion or ignorance, when the duty comes but it's too hard, I can't do it. I don't feel right. I don't feel like doing it. That's the mode of passion and ignorance. I don't feel like it. No. In the mode of goodness, whether you feel like it or not, you do your prescribed duties. And you don't worry about, am I going to be victor or the conquered? No. And doesn't care about what I'm going to win. No. And we see this throughout Bhagavad Gita, a symptom of the mode of goodness. One does what he's supposed to do, regardless of the outcome. Just like Jatayu. Even Sita told Jatayu, no. Don't fight Ravan. But Jatayu said, no. I have to honor Dasarath. Sita has been stolen. And even though Sita said, no, you're going to die, Jatayu said, no. I must try. And of course, Jatayu was killed in the line of duty. But what did he get as a benediction? How did he give up his body? In the arms of Ram. Best way to go. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama.